Centerville is the next community located along the Wisconsin Great River Road. The town is home to antique shops and orchards. While traveling this section of the Wisconsin Great River Road, we'll take a few minutes to learn about an industry that once supported thousands of people and many of the communities along the Upper Mississippi River. Most of the communities along the Wisconsin Great River Road have a connection to the freshwater pearl and the pearl button industry that thrived from the 1890s to the mid-1900s. Pearl buttons were later replaced by cheaper plastic buttons, and the industry quickly faded. Today, mussels are no longer commercially harvested from the Mississippi River. For La Crosse, Wisconsin's sesquicentennial celebration, Terry Visger created a story based on her research into the pearl button industry. Terry paid particular attention to the actual accounts given by the people who worked the river to harvest the mussels and worked in the pearl button factories that once dotted the Upper Mississippi River from the 1890s into the mid-1900s.
Hey there, Henry! Hurry up with that load! I got the water boiling! Oh, hey, I didn't see you there. I was too busy hollering at my husband, Henry. You here for pearl buying? Or you ain't dressed for clamming, I can tell. Well, you don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Well, why don't you sit down here for a spell and I'll tell you about all of us folks here camped out along the Mississippi River in these tents and boathouses. See, all of us, we clammers. We go out into the river there and we bring back shells to send up to the Wisconsin Pearl Button Company up there in La Crosse. Henry, me, oh, we've been clamming, oh, I bet you about 10 years now. We're up from St. Louis. Started out in Muscatine, Iowa. Then, of course, you know, things dried up there. And so we moved on up north here with all these other clammers. Now I hear tell there's people clamming all the way up to St. Paul. Of course, calling us clammers ain't really right, because it ain't really clams that we're getting out of the river. Them's really freshwater mussels. I think they make right nice buttons. I like them lots better than the wood ones or the metal ones or them horn buttons. Of course, from what I hear tell, it was them horn buttons that started this whole thing. See, there was this feller over there in Germany, of all places. What was his name now? Beppel or something like that. I don't know. Anyhow, he was making buttons out of horns. And then one day, somebody from the good old U.S. of A., he sent him a box of freshwater mussels. Well, that feller, he put them away for a while. Ain't that just like a man? And then one day, he finally got them out, and he cut himself some buttons, and he thought that they was the finest buttons that he'd ever seen. So right then and there, he sold that factory in Germany, bought himself a ticket to America. He brought along his saws and lathes and such. When he got here, why, he started west, because the feller that sent him those mussels had said that he'd found him about 200 miles west of Chicago. So that's where this feller was headed. Well, after a while, of course, he run out of money, and so he hired himself out as a farmhand. And then one day, he was taking a bath in the Sagamon River there in Illinois, and he cut his foot. And he looked down, and there was all kinds of mussel shells. But they weren't quite the ones he was looking for. So he kept moving on. He found some more in the Rock River. And then when he got to the Mississippi, them was just the mussels that he wanted. So he cut himself 4 buttons, and then he took them to the Mercantile there in Muscatine. And that fella at the Mercantile, he gave him 10 cents right then and there. Well, that started the whole thing. Pretty soon, folks was coming from all over to clam there in Muscatine. Why, I heard tell, of course, I never counted, but I heard tell that at one time there was more than 40 businesses associated with clamming there in Muscatine. Why, when Henry and me first got there, you just walk right out in the river. You just pick up all the shells you wanted. Then after a while, of course, you had to go knee-deep, and then pretty soon, then you needed to have a boat. And then, of course, well, then things just sort of dried up, and that's why we moved north up here. But it's still, it's a real good business to get into if you wanted to. Don't cost much. That John boat that Henry's got down there, that costs, oh, about $10. And then Henry and all the rest of the clammers, they make their own hooks. Henry, he takes 3 pieces of wire, some people take 4, and he twists them around, and then he flails them out at the end. Calls it a crow's foot, because that's what it looks like. And then he ties string to them, and then he takes, oh, 50 or more, I don't know, and ties them onto a big old iron bar. And then he goes out into that John boat, And then when he gets out over what he thinks is a real good mussel bed, well, then Henry just throws that iron bar and them hooks and whatnot over the side of the boat, and then the current just takes him right on down the river over the mussels. Well, them mussels, they're sitting down there with their shells wide open, hoping to get lunch from the Mississippi. And when them hooks hit them, why, they just clamp tight shut on them hooks. Then when Henry, when he thinks he's got a whole mess of them, he brings them on up. He's got two forks on either side of his boat that he hooks that iron bar onto, and then he starts pulling them off. Of course, he's got another iron bar already. So while he's pulling them off, he's dragging that river again. And then he oh, I can tell right now you're thinking, with all that iron bar and them hooks and them shells, there ain't no way that that river's going to be able to pull that boat over them mussels. But us clammers, we thought of that too. Because underneath that boat, we got ourselves a mule. No, it ain't no animal. He's like a big old black sail. But we call it a mule because, well, just like the mule pulls the farmer's plow, well, this just pulls us right down the river. Anyhow, where was it? Oh, yeah. Well, then, when Henry's got a whole mess of them, he brings them up here to me, and I boil them out in this here water here. Takes only about 20 minutes or so, and then them shells, they just pop right open. And then the youngins and me, we clean out the meat. Sometimes we sell it to farmers because they use it for pig feed or chicken feed, but I wouldn't buy any of that meat if I was you. Tastes just like fish. I'd save my money for a good old corn-fed hog. But sometimes they use it for manure, for fertilizer, and oh, makes a right good catfish bait. But mostly when the youngins and me are going through that meat, why, we're treasure hunting. Because we're looking to find ourselves a pearl. You find yourself the right pearl, why, you could go up to La Crosse, you could buy yourself the finest house you'd ever want to see. You'd be have it made in the shade, not another worry in the world. I thought you was a buyer, in fact, because, you know, there's all kinds of buyers around here that come from fancy places like England and France and India. And they're buying at all hours of the day and night. Why, I heard tell that there was this clammer down in Harper's Ferry. He found himself a nice big pearl. And that night, wouldn't you know, he went to the tavern. Well, he showed that pearl to the barkeep. And then when he got his snoot full, he finally went on back home to his tent. But that barkeep, he sent word to that buyer, John Peacock. He's a real big buyer around here. And that peacock went in the middle of the night and got that clammer up out of bed and gave him $1,000 for that pearl. Can you imagine? But that peacock fella, he sold it to somebody in New York for $5,000. And then I heard tell, of course you know how stories can be, but I heard tell that that fella in New York sold it to somebody in England for $20,000. Why, there was a clamor in Genoa. He sold a pearl to the Queen of England for her crown jewel collection. But I can see why. Some of them pearls, oh, they just all pretty from those different kind of well, you didn't know there's different kind of mussels? Well, Lord, yes, there's all kinds of different mussels. Well, they got all these fancy science names. But us clammers, we call them by what they look like the old big elephant ear, or the fat pocketbook, or the warty back. Now, you take your three ridge clam, or washboard clam, that one's got a pink pearl, and then the three ridge, that one will be blue, or green, or lavender, or buckets, them's pink too. But, oh, you know, the one that I'd just like to see someday, I don't think I'd ever find it, but I'd just like to see it, is the one from the little lady finger, because they say that pearl is black, with flames of blue and green. Oh, don't that sound pretty? Of course, mostly all we find is slugs. Them's a misshapen one, don't you know? See, what happens is that mussel will get something inside its shell that it don't like. I don't know. What do you know about a mussel? It just itches it, I suppose. I don't know. But then it'll take that same stuff that it makes the pretty inside of the shell with that we like for the buttons, and it'll wrap that around that thing that's bothering it. And if it does it right, why, then you get yourself a pretty pearl. But most of the time, it's all lumpy and misshapen, and then that's what we call a slug. Of course, some slugs you can get some money for. Why, upwards of $75 or more. Well, this here's a funny story. See, there was a tale about this farmer from around these parts. He'd gotten some mussel meat for catfishing. Caught himself a nice mess of catfish. And then he went home and he cleaned them fish and he, of course, threw the innards to his chickens. And then he's sitting there on his porch and he saw his rooster. He was acting poorly. And so he went down and he stuck his fingers down the rooster's gullet and he pulled out a big old slug. Well, the next time he saw that peacock feller, you know, that buyer that I was telling you about, well, he showed that slug to that peacock feller. And that peacock, he gave him $150 for that slug. Why, that farmer thought that was his luckiest day of his life. But that peacock feller, I told you, he knows his pearls. Well, he took that slug and he peeled off the outer edges. Peels off just like an onion. And inside was a pigeon blood red pearl. Can you imagine? I never did hear tell how much he made from that one, but oh, Lord, I can just imagine. I can just imagine. Of course, my oldest boy right now, he's up at Lake Pepin. He's just pearling up there with his best friend, Harry Spence. Them boys are just up there hoping to find pearls. All kinds of folks spend the summer up at Lake Pepin just pearl hunting. They say that place is just a hotbed of pearls. Sure would be nice if them boys would find one this summer. Well, maybe me here today. You know, well, don't get me wrong now. We make a nice good living with the climate. It's good here. Why, there's a supply boat comes right from across, bring us our supplies. We don't even have to go to town. And Henry and me, why, some weeks we make upward to $30. Well, so that ain't nothing to shake a stick at, but oh, if we found ourselves a pearl, why, that'd just be something. Of course, we can't clam anymore now all year long. We have to stop about December, whatnot, with the river freezing in and some of the regulations and whatnot. And so Henry, he gets himself a job then up at the Wisconsin Pearl Button Company up there in La Crosse. You know, you've seen it on 3rd Street right there on the causeway, right by the La Crosse River. Well, now that things slowed down in Muscatine, they say that place up in La Crosse, that factory there, is the finest button factory in the whole wide world. Well, I can see why. Henry says it's a real fine place to work, real fine. Why, he says that sometimes there's upwards to 300 people working there in that factory. Why, they got themselves a nurse. Works there all day long. She's checking out people, you know, if they get sick or hurt on the job. And, well, then, of course, you got to keep a real close eye on the girls, you know, make sure that they're strong enough to do the work. My sister, Lila, she had herself a job up there at the Wisconsin Pearl Button Company. She was sewing buttons onto cards. She'd sew 12 buttons on a card, and they'd give her a penny. I mean, you can see Lila, she was doing right by herself. But then, of course, that Lila, she got herself in the family way. So, you know, the nurse, she found out about it. And, well, of course, they had to let Lila go. She wouldn't be strong enough to do the work. And, well, you know, she wouldn't be a good influence on them other young ladies there. So Lila, she lost that job. But now Henry, when he's up there, he saws buttons out of the ebony shell. See, every saws from a specific shell, and Henry, he specializes in the ebony shell. And then they pay him by how many blanks he does in a day. Henry says that they do right good by him. He says that they're real fair, but of course that's not what everybody thinks. I suppose you heard about the trouble there last year up at the Wisconsin Pearl Button Company when that dang fool Matt Ruskin, when he said that they wasn't paying him right for the number of blanks he was cutting. And so that fool, he took a gun and he shot Superintendent Studier right there on the front steps of the Wisconsin Pearl Button Company, right there on 3rd Street. Shot him 4 times, killed him, dead. Trial's going on right now. Of course, that Ruskin, he's claiming insanity. Everybody knows that man's crazy, but that don't mean he didn't intend to do it. But oh, here comes Henry now. Well, so I best get back to work here. But it was real nice talking to you. Why don't you come back sometime and I can hear about your life. That is, if and we're still here. If things dry up around here like they did in Muscatine, well, I suppose we'll be moving north, but I sure do hope not. It sure is pretty around here in La Crosse, ain't it?
Please pause the audio tour and continue again after you've passed through Centerville.